The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
The patriarchy has strikes again. It has striked again, and I don't know what to do. Washington State University has canceled its fat studies class. Fat studies. I can't study fatness anymore at Washington State University. The fat activists all over the country are furious now. The moment they finish their second plate of refried tofu, they're going to waddle out into the street and scream at the sky. Why? Why? Throughout the country, campus feminists are quivering, terrified that fat shaming will only get worse now. So let's talk about the fact that fat studies class exists. Now, I want you to know I speak to you as Lord of the Fat People. I speak to you from my chair in my studio that smells, well, it smells like donuts with just a hint of Cinnabon. And this is the room that I usually sit in after the show in my underpants and eat Oreo cookies by the sleeve. So I speak to you as an expert. So let's talk about fat studies. First of all, take a guess which program the class is under. If you said women's studies, you win a Diet Coke and a cheeseburger. The course is a, quote, examination of weight-based oppression as a social justice issue with other systems of oppression based on gender, race, class, age, sexual orientation, and ability. The Antifa mask and the Drumpf t-shirt is not included. Our country is now in the throes of an obesity epidemic, and academics are concerned about fat-inclusive bikinis, and I am not kidding you, the anti-male gaze. The anti-male gaze. Yes, that's right. The fat studies folks have flipped the feminist concept of the male gaze, which claims that the patriarchy is triggered by white cisgender men whose oppressive gaze vilifies women, worsens misogyny. In a gasping contradiction, an inadvertent counterexample of the original theory, fat shaming and fat study feminists claim that anytime white cisgender men don't find overweight women attractive and are practicing the anti-gaze, it's because they're misogynistic. I need somebody from the campus to answer, which one is it? I'm a misogynist if I gaze, or I'm a misogynist if I don't gaze? Now, I don't expect an answer because, you know, they're all too busy fighting for the rights of oppressed communities, often without invitation. I mean, I'm fat. I never asked them to fight for me. Oh, is it because I'm a male and I'm white, so I don't count? Now, tuition at Washington State runs about $5,000 per class. That's a waste of money you're never going to get back. This course is run by Dr. Deborah Kristall, who has applied her PhD in sport psychology, women's study, and apparel design to help students understand fat stigma, weight bias, and thin privilege. Also, of course, the weight-based oppression. Now, her writings have been featured, and I'm not sure if this has been peer-reviewed, but her writings often appear in the journal Fat Studies. I get that all the time. I tried to cancel my subscription, but they make it so hard to stop getting that monthly magazine, Fat Studies. So I don't know what to do. Anyway, she uses critical feminist theory and narrative pedagogies to fight fat stigma by promoting activism to erode the thin-centric orientation among students. What the hell are you talking about? First of all, the word critical is academic lingo for neo-Marxist. Anytime you hear a professor or academic rattle on about critical theory, they're talking about Marx. They're basing what they say now on the principles of the Frankfurt School, also known as neo-Marxism. And narrative pedagogies, it's academic code for a form of teaching based on relativism, in which students and teachers use their subjective experiences to learn, because any idea can be interpreted in an infinite number of ways, because there is no meaning, there is no truth, there is no objective reality. Postmodernism, meaning the Fat Studies movement. Like much of the campus anti-logic modern feminism and social justice leftism, is based on the objective statement that there are no objective statements. Wait, what? And since feelings are facts, concepts like fat phobia, microaggression, cisgender white privilege are all considered not just legitimate, but indisputably true, even though there is no actual truth. So it's the food's fault. No, wait, it's not the food's fault. It's the patriarchy's fault. It's the patriarchy that forced me to eat that second tub of cinnamon-laced cupcake batter. And I know who the leader of this troop is. Yes.
It's Friday, April 13th.
You want to talk...
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You want to talk about cisgender bias. Bill O'Reilly comes to mind. Forcing me to eat sleeve after sleeve of Oreo cookies.
What's cisgender, Beck? What is that?
It's just like you not to know, Bill. Just like you not to know.
What is it?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I think cisgender.
I mean, gender is male, female. I got
right.
that.
Cisgender is
what we traditionally thought of as gender back in the days where we were ill-informed and non- evolved.
So when you say male and female doesn't really exist anymore. It's cisgender. You're a close-minded bigot.
Oh.
It's old school,
so
Bill.
You're a corpulent. I don't know what else to call you.
I think that was a fancy word for fat. I think that's what word of the day. Me. Bill O'Reilly just called me fat.
Look, on BillO'Reilly.com, we have a special section for people who overeat. And we applaud them.
Yes.
Yeah, we encourage that you fulfill your basic desires.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're Zoftig, we like you just the same.
Wow.
BillO'Reilly.com is cisgendered, whatever that is, we are.
Yeah.
And we want people to go there.
I think that's
and
bad.
Snack.
I think that's bad. Isn't that bad, Stu, and cisgender, being cisgender bad?
I think no. It's just the... It's the new word for the traditional understanding of gender.
Okay, well, I don't think you understand. Okay, because there is no objective truth.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
So Bill O'Reilly, lots to talk to you about. First, can we start with important news, and then we'll go to the big news. But important news: what the hell's happening with Syria?
Well, I think that there is a fear on the part of the Trump administration that if the United States launches military action, which would have to be bombings, missiles, that kind of thing, no ground action, that the stock market will tank, that it'll interrupt the economy, it'll cause unintended consequences, Putin will do something rotten, Iran will too. So it'll throw off all the things that Trump wants to accomplish. That's what's holding them back, the unintended consequences.
Yeah, no, I'm asking you, we're just sending 12 warships over into the area. This will be the biggest buildup since, I think, the Iraq War. We're building a coalition. It makes me a little nervous that there's more than just a couple of missiles being lobbed over, or that we're afraid that Russia may respond as they say they are.
Well, the Russian fleet got out of Tartus. That's their Mediterranean port. The reason that Putin is in Syria is because he made a deal with Assad to have a big air base there and to have a port, Tartus, T-A-R-T-U-S. You'll remember that St. Paul hung out in Tartus.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's why Putin is in there. He's got his Mediterranean port. But the Soviet warships are out of there. They were ordered to leave. So I think it's a good thing that warships are going. I'd like to see some British and French warships as well. Because if you basically set up a blockade of Syria, you can do them heavy, heavy economic damage without shooting anybody. So that might be the way to go here. The guy who's calling the shots is Mattis, the defense secretary. It's not Trump calling the shots here. Mattis is really in charge.
So you don't believe the rumor that Trump and Bolton are asking for a hard line, and the Pentagon with Mattis are pushing back and saying, no, Mr. President, we don't want to go that far.
No, I think Bolton and Mattis are pretty simpatico, word of the day. and Mattis is the lead on this. See, Bolton's not going to go in and start to break the furniture on his second day there, third day there. So I think that's the scenario, and I kind of like the blockade thing. I think that that's a message, and that can do a lot of harm to Syria and hurt Assad's power base.
Okay, as I look up at the as I look up at the televisions and the monitors, I keep seeing Fox News talking about, you know, pretty much actual news the whole day, and CNN just continues to focus on Comey and the pee-pee tapes.
I know. You know, I wrote a column, and I hope I sent it to you, Beck, because I always send my columns to Glenn Beck just for his approval.
I never get them, but I
sent it. From now on, I'm gonna copy Stu. Maybe I'll get approval from Stu.
Thank you, Bill. Smart.
But anyway, look, there is no media, honest media in this country anymore. And anything that they can grab to hammer Trump, they will. The real irony on this is that CNN hated Comey when Comey was going after Hillary Clinton. And I had Lanny Davis on BillO'Reilly.com 2 days ago, and he broke some news. He said that he talked to the Inspector General of the Justice Department about Comey and handed over documents that make Comey look like a complete phony and a complete fraud. This is Lanny Davis saying it. And Lanny Davis, of course, a very close friend of the Clintons. So it's instructive to watch now how Comey's the good guy again, because Comey is trying to demean and to besmirch Donald Trump, which is a horrible situation for a former FBI director who had the highest clearance of security to write a tawdry book smearing, you know, yes, Trump fired him. Yes, we know Comey doesn't like him. But to get down in the gutter, that really reflects poorly on James.
I will tell you the one thing that I saw that I thought was remarkably slimy. And, you know, what is the name of the book? Like, you know, A Higher Honor or something like that. I thought was totally dishonorable. He told the story, whether it's true or not, I don't know. But he told the story that General Kelly came to him after Trump fired him and said, you know, I can't work for a dishonorable man and I'm going to quit after this. And he had built this up like, you know, General Kelly was the one stabilizing factor and yada, yada, yada. And then he exposes him as coming out and saying that. I mean,
that any human being had with James Comey is obviously not going to be kept confidential. The thing
But wait. The point of that is, though, is he was trying to make Kelly seem very important as the only adult in the room and the only stabilizing factor. Well, if you cared about your country and if that were true, you wouldn't out the guy you were counting on keeping the president.
Sure. He wants to make Kelly squirm because he doesn't like Kelly either. But I thought the worst thing, and I'm probably not going to read the book because I don't believe James Comey tells the truth, but I thought the worst thing was talking about Trump's concern for his wife over these unverified allegations in a Russian dossier. Now, if any man is concerned for his wife's feelings, that's a good thing. And to turn it around into some kind of tawdry display, as Comey did in his book, really says all you need to know about James Comey, does it not?
Yeah, and if he's concerned about his wife and he goes to James Comey, but he did these things, Why would you go to a guy that you supposedly don't trust and say, hey, can you verify that I didn't do these things?
Yeah, he's going to the FBI saying, listen, if you can give me some information I can pass on to Melania that would, you know, make her feel a little bit better, please do so. And totally rational, totally caring, if you want to use that word, request. And then Comey turns it around to try to use it. And, of course, the New York Daily News picks it up, puts it on the front page. I mean, you know, it really, this country, America right now, because of the media, has really descended into a place that makes me extremely uncomfortable.
More with Bill O'Reilly here in just a second, and we're going to go to the raid on the president's personal attorney.
Glenn Beck.
I'm going to get into the shakedown of the president's attorney and how that was handled and what it means here in just a second. But Bill, I've got about 2.5 minutes. I want to get your comment on this. I just look up at the screen and on CNN, the banner, the lower third says, Comey calls Trump an unethical liar. And CNN says, we go now to Democratic Congressman Denny Heck to get his opinion on this. That's like saying the new Tesla 3 is a crappy car and the company's not going to be around long. We go now to Mike Ditto, a Chevy Volt salesman, for his opinion.
For his objective analysis.
Right.
But it's more the same. You know, I just can't emphasize enough to your listeners that this is a total collapse of any information flow that's worthy. You know, I wrote this column that I referred to before the break to show you underneath what you see on television and what you read in the newspaper, how it's being designed. This is all by design now. It's not an accident. It's not a mistake. I mean, they take anonymous sources, then so much ridiculous. People familiar with the conversation.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, fine. And then they print it as fact. And then they bring on five people. And let's go to Jeffrey Toobin to discuss the anonymous source thing that we don't even know is true, but we don't really care if it's true. Because we're going to treat it as true.
I will tell you, you know, all the world is but a stage. That phrase has come to mind more than ever. I mean, almost every day I look at television and I think that. I feel like we're in a play right now.
Well, it's a bad, bad thing. And there are a few voices, I think you're one of them, I certainly am, that don't have an agenda. We just want to bring information to the people. We tell them whether it's speculative or whether it's factual, and then the people can decide for themselves. But this vast manipulation is just crushing the spirit of the country.
Okay, so we're going to go into what happened with the president's lawyer. They now are hoping that there are tapes involved. Oh my gosh. We'll go into that next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We go down to Bill O'Reilly, and from BillO'Reilly.com, we want to talk a little bit about Michael Cohen, the personal attorney of the president, who had his home, office, and hotel room raided earlier this week. First of all, Bill, do you know why he had a hotel room? He lives in New York.
I do not.
Okay. Do you think it's weird that they went to, I mean, like they were trying to find something that he might have been taking from the office or keeping with him?
You know, it'd be irresponsible of me to speculate. I just don't know.
Okay. They are saying now that one of the things that they're looking for is communications between Cohen and WikiLeaks because the Hollywood, the Access Hollywood tape came out. And then right after that, WikiLeaks started to release things about, what's his name? I want to say Lanny Davis, but yeah, Podesta. So your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, you say they're saying. Who's they're saying?
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, leaks.
Yes.
All right, this is the big story today. So the FBI raids Cohen's office, and then all of a sudden the Washington Post is printing what the FBI found and all of that. So somebody from the FBI or the Justice Department, Rod Rosenstein's office, or Mueller's office, had to leak it to the Washington Post.
Yeah.
They had to.
Now, yours,
number one.
This is one of the points that you, and you should make this point. One of the points in your op-ed is about, you know, when this happened to Bill Clinton, Ken Starr was not leaking that we know of.
Right. This is a torrent of this, and nobody's trying to stop it as far as I know. So you want to leak to the Washington Post? Go ahead. We're not going to give you a lie detector test. We're not going to start to prosecute people who are doing this because it's illegal. If an FBI agent raids anybody's office and then calls the Washington Post and tells them what they found, that's a felony. Okay? So, but it's accepted. Who's talking about that? Nobody. It's all the Washington Post reports. And Washington Post doesn't know if it's true. They don't know, but they don't care.
But hang on just a second. Let me just play devil's advocate here. I
sure.
tend to agree with you, but let me play devil's advocate. Is it possible that, these leaks would have happened or could have happened under Clinton, but it's a different world in the media because of Internet
24? I say that in my article. I say that maybe the leaks did it. It's possible.
Right.
But they could have leaked to anti-Clinton people like Rush Limbaugh. I mean, they could have leaked to, there are a lot of, you know, the Washington Times.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of anti-Clinton people that they could have leaked, but no leaks came out.
Mm-hmm.
But now, within 2 hours after anything happens involving Donald Trump, Washington Post, New York Times, or CNN gets it. Okay. Now, back to Cohen. So you raid the office, and you have to have presented to a judge to get the warrant for the raid some kind a possible felony. All right, so we have evidence that a felony was committed. Here it is, judge. Here it is. Judge looks at it. It's coming from the FBI. So, okay, I'm signing the warrant. Go in and go look for backup on what you think happened. So they go. And then they seize all kinds of records. They don't, it's not a warrant that is specific. We're just looking for this, Mr. Cohen. Do you have it? You know, please tell us where it is. No, they get everything. So there is like 10,000 potential violations of attorney-client privilege, not just with Donald Trump, but Cohen's got other people he works for as well.
Wait a minute.
Okay, so there's 10,
wait. I'm not going to let you skate on that one. This is not a violation of attorney-client privilege with a clean and dirty FBI team. This is the way it is set up. This is not usually done, but can be done. It's certainly not ever done with the president at something this high level, so they better have something. The only question is, do you trust the clean team to stay away from the dirty team?
No, you can't do that, Beck, because
but that's the way it's done, Bill.
Leaked stuff about the raid. Somebody involved with the raid leaked it.
Yeah, but they did not leak what they have found. They have not leaked what they found. They looked.
They leaked. This is what we were looking for.
Yes, and that's the dirty team.
Right.
Right.
If they're going to leak that, then you have a massive, massive potential, and I did use the word potential.
Yes, I agree with you.
Violation of attorney-client privilege.
Yes,
you know what I'm going to submit to you? I'm going to submit to you today on the Glenn Beck program on Friday the 13th. That there is no attorney-client privilege in this country anymore, as there is no contractual law. Contract law, forget it. Forget it. You sign a contract, and it says X, and if somebody violates X, the system says, we don't care. We don't care. There's no contract law. There's no attorney-client privilege. There isn't anything. There's no privacy on Facebook. There's nothing. Somebody wants to stand outside your house with some kind of gizmo that can record your conversation inside your house? Who's going to do something about it? Nobody. So the American people ought to know that all the rights they thought they had, talking to an attorney, signing a valid contract, they're gone.
Hey, wait, wait. I'm not going to let you. Bill, I am with you on 99% of that. That our rights are gone. There is no such thing as privacy. However, attorney-client privilege does stand. This is when, if I am the client that is accused, everything that I say about my case to my attorney and everything my attorney says back to me is protected. However,
I am going to guarantee
you. Wait a minute.
I'm going to guarantee you that what you're saying is false because there are going to be leaks about what Trump discussed with his attorney.
Then that is different than saying that this is a violation of attorney-client privilege. This is the way the system is built. If I'm colluding in another crime, or if my attorney is committing a crime, when we're talking about that thing, it is not privileged. And that's why there are two teams, one that is investigating one crime and another team that is working basically for the court that goes in and says, you have to find these things, everything else that is not regarding these things, you cannot touch and you cannot reveal.
And you believe.
No, I don't. But I'm saying
that's what they did with Cohen.
I am saying that when someone makes the blanket statement that this was destroying attorney-client privilege, no, this is the system that we have always had. This is not making law up.
I'm absolutely right. And when it comes out, I'm going to demand airtime on your
program. No, because you're not listening to me.
I sure am.
No, you're not.
You're talking theoretical.
I am talking about the law.
You're the one speculating here, right, Bill? You're the one saying that this is going to happen in the future. Right.
Hang on just a second. I'm talking about the law, and then I'm saying to you, I agree with you that I don't trust the people involved, but that's different than saying there is no attorney-client privilege under the law.
I don't know how I can't get through to you and Stu, okay? The law is there. In the wording of the law is still there. Same thing with contracts, Beck. It's there. But if it isn't enforced, if things don't happen to people who violate the law.
I agree.
Then it doesn't
mean
anything.
But so far, I know you don't like to I know you don't like to speculate. You like to deal on facts. So far, they have not violated the attorney-client privilege. They have not.
Okay, but it's only been 3 days.
Okay, but I know Bill O'Reilly does not like to speculate. Boy, I'm going to play that take back over and over again. But I know you don't like to speculate.
All right.
So
I can't. Accuse. I can say
you
that
can
this
speculate
is a potential, as I have said 14 times already.
I know you're speculating.
I think the potential will be fulfilled.
All right,
Bill.
All right.
Can I ask your journalistic expertise on these leaking here on the leaking issue for a minute? Listen to this. This is from the Washington Post this week. It's about a portrait of Trump in the current moment. Comes from interviews with 21 people, and then they break down the types of people that they've interviewed. Now, they're using the number 21 to gather credibility. They talked to 21 people. It must be true.
They're trying to convince their readers that they're not a bunch of charlatans.
Right.
And what I'm saying is, look, if the Washington Post had a stellar record of being fair, not only to Donald Trump, but to conservatives, to traditional Americans, to the Republican Party, if their record was fair, then I would believe them. Mm-hmm. But it's not, Stu.
No.
I would
tend to agree with that.
They hate anyone who is not of liberal orthodoxy. They despise them. So that, therefore, they can say, we talked to 87,000 people. And I'm going, I don't care, because the outcome it was already told to the reporter before he talked to one person. This is the outcome we want, all right? We want Trump out of office. That has been made very clear by the publications, New York Times.
Okay, hang on just a second.
Go ahead.
Hang on just a second. No, I just want to be very specific.
Yes.
Because I do not believe those conversations were had. I believe those conversations don't need to be had. Listen to me. Listen to me. I believe those conversations don't need to be had because it's groupthink. They all think the same way.
Yes. But
so there's no planning. There's no conspiracy.
I find it very hard to believe that a reporter would say, I talked to 21 people who told me, you know, and then the person didn't talk to any 21 people. But
right.
It doesn't matter because they might have talked to people for 3 minutes. Hey, did you hear this? Oh, yeah, I heard it. Bye.
And that's okay. That's what I'm getting
but
at
the
here.
The outcome of the article, this is what everybody has to understand.
Mm-hmm.
When these reporters are assigned something, all right, it's not just Trump, all right, it is made quite clear to them what the editors want, what they want. This is what we want you to find out. Bang. And those reporters are going to do that because if they don't, they're not going to get the good assignments. I could give you names. I know this. I've seen it. All right. And it absolutely happens. But now it's an epidemic because all of them want Trump out of office.
Right. I agree with you. We just had Ben Smith on yesterday. We just had Ben Smith.
Why aren't there any leaks that say that Trump does something good?
Is there one leak that says,
hey, he did something good?
Yeah.
One? Just one. I just want one.
Right. What I'm trying to get at here with this, though, Bill, is it's source inflation. Like, they're using that number. Listen to what comes after it.
Quickly.
Interviews with 21 administration officials, which would be notable if they had 21 administration officials,
sure.
But that's not where it stops. 21 administration officials, comma, outside advisors. What the hell is that? Comma, lawmakers. Chuck Schumer is a lawmaker. They interviewed
sure.
Chuck Schumer about this?
Outside advisors and staff of CNN.
Right.
Look, it's all a ruse. You know that. Come on.
All right. Bill O'Reilly.
BillO'Reilly.com.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to go there this weekend. We got lots of great stuff, Beck. So I want you yourself to go. What are you doing this weekend anyway? You doing anything
I'm
fun?
Just spending my time at BillO'Reilly.com. That's what I'm doing.
You can eat donuts while you do
that. I can eat donuts in my underpants.
Simultaneously.
It sounds like a fabulous weekend, Bill O'Reilly. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks for having me in, guys.
God bless. BillO'Reilly.com. I think, you know what, I feel like we're saying similar things.
Yeah, you're close.
We're in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. He just refuses to listen.
That's true. That's basically Bill O'Reilly every Friday in this hour. That's
all right.
Glenn Beck.
Man, I can't tell you how excited I am for this interview. Mary Jo Kopechne's family, in their first national interview, at least that I know of, talking about Mary Jo, how she died, Ted Kennedy, and the new movie Chappaquiddick. It's going to be interesting to hear from them in a story that has been buried for so long. And the New York Times is now saying, oh, it's totally unfair. Totally unfair. They didn't accuse him of killing her, just leaving her. They didn't accuse him of having an affair. They didn't accuse him of anything. They just showed the most basic facts. It's still very damning.
Bad for Ted because he was bad.
Yeah, he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
But they did not push that storyline at all. And they say that it's unfair. Wow. We'll hear from Mary Jo Kopechne's family. I can't wait. Don't miss it. It's next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.